Welcome to Smart Healthcare Safety from ECRI, the most trusted voice in healthcare, committed to advancing effective, evidence-based care. I'm your host, Paul Anderson, and for 15 years, I've overseen our risk management membership programs here at ECRI. Tens of thousands of healthcare leaders rely on us as an independent, trusted authority to improve the safety, quality, and cost-effectiveness of care across all healthcare settings worldwide. You can learn more about our unique capabilities to improve outcomes at www.ecri.org. Today, we're talking about strategies non-acute care organizations can take in their purchasing and planning to ensure resilience around supply chain issues, not just to manage financial concerns, but also to ensure continuity in operations and safe patient care. Our guests are Tim Gibson, ECRI's Senior Manager of Functional Equivalence, and Andy Poole, Associate Director, Strategy and Innovation, also here at ECRI. What makes dealing with purchasing and supply chain issues different in non-acute settings like ambulatory surgery or aging services compared to a hospital or a health system acute care type setting?
So I think there's a couple of big differences that jump to mind right off the bat. And the first one is it tends to be the infrastructure. It doesn't tend to be as robust as larger IDN health systems. So you have fewer individuals focused in on it. A lot of times they may have other duties that are included outside of supply chain. A very real example would be at a surgery center I was at where our materials manager also was a rad tech. And so would go in and do x-rays during breaks for the rad tech. So it's very lean operations, and that tends to be a challenge. But the other big one, and probably the larger one that I think is more significant and Tim can add to, is really around just the volume power that these organizations have compared to larger health systems. So they may not be getting the same attention and the discounts and the attention when there is a shortage and there needs to be substitute products delivered than the IDNs.
Yeah, Andy, I would echo those sentiments. You know, just the staff that they have available to run their day-to-day operations is nowhere near what, you know, an acute care hospital has available to them. And then when things go awry, as we've seen over the last, you know, few years, whether it's pandemic issues or supply chain shortages or, you know, all kinds of disruption, those same individuals are tasked with dealing with those challenges, and it makes it hard for them for sure.
As you're out talking to our clients in these care settings, what are some of the barriers you see to them giving the attention to purchasing that maybe we might think it deserves?
It goes back to some of the things that we talked about just prior, where there's less time per the individuals. They're leaner, so they've got other duties on their plate, and they're really unable to spend the focus, whether it's looking into to a product. And to that end, too, I think beyond that, if we had to say there's something else that's a challenge for them, spending time with it and barriers would be the support they have and the insight into their purchasing program. There's issues where they don't have the data of the larger health systems available to themselves to even see what am I spending my money on? How is it, you know, being able to build a predictive model and being able to really look at the performance of the supplies that they're purchasing and seeing how they're kind of stacking up to each other. So I think that not just the people, that's probably number one, but then the tools that they have to be able to then not just spend time on it, but spend quality time on it and really make insightful changes and observations and management of their supply chain.
Tim, you know, whether we're talking about supply shortages or just general management of purchasing and supply chains, we hear this phrase a lot of functional equivalence. I mean, shoot, it's in your title, right? Functional equivalence. So can you sort of describe for our audience what are functional equivalents and why is it an important concept to understand?
Yeah, so functional equivalents are something that, you know, ECRI has been using as terminology for the last few years, but other folks might refer to them as crosses or subs or alternate products. But the idea is that you would be able to substitute in another product that is functionally equivalent to what you are using today. So whether it's a disposable linen pad, whether it's a glove, you know, there are different key performance indicators for these types of products that would make a sub or a cross functionally equivalent or perhaps not. So when we talk about functional equivalence, the idea of key performance indicators is an important concept to understand. all product categories are going to have certain key performance indicators that will allow you to compare and contrast different products, whether you're in a recall situation or a backorder situation and you're trying to find an alternate item. You need to know, how does the alternate stack up to what I am currently using today based on those key performance indicators? And in a perfect world, matches across the board, same sizes, same colors, same materials. And it's an easy switch, but oftentimes it's not so easy. And understanding what the differences are, that's going to be important to make that switch as well.
And when we talk about, you know, you gave examples of a couple different types of like consumable supplies, right, that are covered. So things like, gloves, for example. Is that sort of the limit of the scope of what we think about functional equivalents, or is it broader than that?
No, absolutely not. It's much broader than that. And if we look at, you know, the world of orthopedics, there's implants, all different kinds of supply items that go along with those type of procedures. You're looking at sutures and, you know, different surgical components, those kinds of things. So when we look at KPIs, we would have KPIs for all of those different product categories. So much larger than just your commodity items, gloves, you know, linens, those kinds of things. There would be KPIs specific to those more complex categories. And that's where the KPIs can really make the determination of how similar or different a product is when you are looking at those very complex categories. Having that unbiased approach really makes it straightforward and clear when comparing two complex products against one another.
So, you know, a lot of times, I think when we talk about issues of supplies and purchasing, the first thought is that this is a cost issue, right? This is a spend management issue. Is there also a safety component to it?
Absolutely. I think it's huge, Ellen. I'm glad you asked that, Paul, because a lot of people do tend to fixate in on, you know, can we find the same product or a very similar product at a better price and make the switch? But we have to remember too that in many instances we're putting it either in a clinician's hand where they've been used to one certain item's performance over several years, and now switching it out brings very real risk factors in for their day. There's one type of syringe, and now you're substituting it out with something else with maybe different safety features, and there's greater risk there. There's also the individual, you know, performance of the product themselves. You really get in and analyze it before you bring it in house. What risk does it present to, you know? And if we think about, residential care and some continence pads, if we bring those in and they don't perform as well, then are we going to start to see some skin breakdown issues and things along those lines? So there's really, I think it can be argued that the primary function is really around safety.
Interesting. You know, so that brings me to this idea that this is probably something we want to be thinking about ahead of time and not waiting for a crisis to occur. So what are, and Tim, I'll start with you, but Andy, certainly please chime in. What are some proactive steps that an organization can take?
Yeah, so I'll go back to the point that Andy made earlier about data, and it really starts with having complete purchase history, records, data that you can start to look at, analyze, and gain those insights from. And once you have that data, then you can do those proactive efforts of, you know, identifying alternatives ahead of time so that you're not waiting for the disruption to happen before you're starting to scramble and figure out what else is out on the market. You've got the clean data. You have the approved substitute ahead of time so that if something occurs, you can quickly pivot and bring that product in. And you're certainly maybe not going to be able to do that for every single product, but having a list of critical items that are important to, you know, the success of the organization and keeping patient care going, maybe starting there would be a good place for organizations to look at.
And Tim, if I'm in an organization and maybe I'm starting to see some gaps, how important is it to at least start now? If I identify that there is a gap in the data that I do want to be capturing, I can't go back maybe and recreate data from the last 24 months, something like that, but I can start today. I have to believe that's pretty important, at least to start somewhere.
Absolutely. Starting to capture data as soon as possible is going to be the best course of action. The more data we have to look at, whether that's 1 month, whether that's 12 months, whether that's 2 years worth of data, is just going to allow an organization to, one, identify the gaps, and then to start to uncover those opportunities. So starting to collect data as comprehensively as possible is going to be the first course of action. And as soon as you can get started, go for it.
You know, Andy, Tim, you both mentioned in a couple different ways looking at data, right, as part of informing our decision making. But if an organization is starting that process and they're finding they've got gaps in their data, what are some steps they can take to go about trying to fill in those gaps, maybe even identifying that they have gaps in the first place? But where can they go as they work through that process?
It's a great question, Paul. And I think as we talk to, you know, our colleagues out in the industry, it is data is gold is what we're hearing, you know, across the board. So everybody's trying to track more and more, but there are gaps. And, you know, there are a lot more in these types of settings, there are more robust inventory management systems that are out there that are allowing for more data points and elements to be captured. You know, there's a lot of consolidation and expansion across the ambulatory industry right now in particular. So as that happens, you're talking about how can you effectively centralize it? So making sure, you know, the information is being captured effectively. But even then, you know, that's gonna tell you a good story around what you are purchasing, what you are getting. But to understand truly the products and how they perform, you know, there are companies like ECRI. We are independent and truly analyze all of the specifications, and Tim's team really breaks down how things perform one against the other to be very objective, unbiased comparisons. Those can be great data points to bring into your organization, your price benchmarking, other tools like that are going to be out there that can really augment the processes within your own organization.
You know, and Andy mentioned earlier, you know, some smaller non-acute organizations maybe are not always getting the same attention from their providers and suppliers as a big, you know, multi-site integrated IDN type might be. Is part of that getting set and gathering data, is that also building and deepening those relationships with your suppliers and distributors so that when you need to make a switch, you've got those relationships established?
Yeah, I think absolutely. It does. And I was even going to go back to the original question and bring in as well around the data that, you know, when we look at how the pandemic's changed the purchasing process, the emphasis used to be for every organization, sole source, you know, as much as you could buy of one product, as much as you could work through one vendor, you're going to get the maximum savings amount. And now with multiple shortages, you really need to be prepared to have, you know, multiple products coming in or multiple relationships with different distributors or vendors to be able to have, you know, not all of your eggs in one basket, as they say. And so I think proactively being able to line up what are like products, where can I work and establish kind of that readiness. If I need to shift one from here to here because this one goes away, I'm ready to do that and I'm able to do that.
You know, in 2023, I feel like any conversation that we have about anything to do with healthcare is, it's always going to be coming back to staffing challenges. I feel like that's just sort of the through line to everything we've talked about this year. So, you know, we talked about the safety importance of the managing functional equivalents, managing the supplies and purchasing program. But if an organization does achieve some of those cost savings in its purchasing, is there a side benefit that maybe that frees up some resources to try to help deal with staffing issues?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talk with our partners a lot, and that's as we've seen inflation start to really challenge some of the traditional discounts, even as, you know, if an organization starting to purchase more and expecting more of a discount, there's a pushback as contracts are expiring, you know, where it used to be going into a negotiation looking for savings from the organization's perspective. They're now seeing the vendors and the suppliers really pushing back because of inflation. Well, the expectations for savings from an organization hasn't changed on the supply chain process. They're still out there needing to find savings opportunities to help fund the staffing increases, the inflation expenses that they're seeing across the board for all of their other services that they're purchasing. So there's still a big push to be able to do that. So absolutely, they're looking at, you know, all of their processes around supply purchasing so that they can evaluate, you know, what is, if these are the most important indicators for what I need to the product to do, where can I find those that check all the boxes and have the best pricing available?
You know, speaking of staffing, Andy mentioned earlier this idea that in, you know, particularly, in, you know, an ambulatory surgery center, a skilled nursing, it's not the type of situation where you've got a team of people who are dedicated exclusively to purchasing, right? You've got folks who are doing multiple jobs, maybe providing clinical care and also related to purchasing. Who are the right people to bring in maybe within an organization to tap them to be part of that purchasing team? If we've got to take a team approach, is it, are we looking for folks with a specific background? How much do I need to keep, you know, frontline providers involved as they're going to be the ones who have to use these products that we purchase? What are our thoughts around the staffing of that team?
Yeah, so I think it's primarily a combination of supply chain folks and working closely with your clinical staff, because ultimately these are going to be the folks that are using these products day in and day out, and having their insights, having their buy-in from the get-go before you even bring a product onto the premises is going to be key to the successful rollout of, you know, a given product. If you can make that process go smoothly from the get-go, you know, you're going to save yourself time and money in the long run from maybe having to go back and look for another product because that rollout wasn't successful within your, you know, within your facility. So combination of supply chain folks, but then working very closely with the clinical staff within the organization.
So I always like to try to wrap up by asking, you know, what's the starting point? What's one thing an organization can do today? They're not going to solve the whole problem today, but if they haven't really thought about, you know, their purchasing program, haven't given it a big review in quite a while, where should they start?
As Tim said, really knowing your data sources is number one, but then you've got to be able to then kind of take that next step of really organizing it into actionable items. So identifying, you know, we think it's always a good exercise to look at what are your top 10 most commonly purchased items? You know, what are the things that you're buying the most of? Because that's going to have a large impact. It's in people's hands all the time. It's obviously going to be, even if it's lower dollar, it's still going to be a significant amount because there's so much volume. Then what are your top 10 most expensive items? And looking at those and saying, seeing where you are in terms of where you are with your contracts on those, where you feel like you are with your pricing, how diverse it is. Am I purchasing everything from one? Is it a big risk for me if something is to go on back order or shortage? You know, and start to think through some of the processes around what's my risk? What are my savings opportunities? You know, if you look at one thing we did at the surgery center I was at was we looked at, you know, our podiatry sets and implants, and we had 7 different sets when we first started. And then we started to see how they compared to each other. And really, when we were able to reduce that number, we were able to increase our purchasing power with the sets that we kind of finalized in on, and we're able to find some pretty significant savings there. You know, those are the things that you want to start to look at to try to start taking some really actionable quick wins. You know, and the quick wins show the process where there is that clinical involvement Tim talked about. You're not here to take away safe products and put in a cheap inferior product. You're here to really look at what's performing well, and then setting it up to be resilient. And I think that's the more you can establish that's what the goal is out of your supply chain team, the more effective it's going to be, and people will embrace the process.
And I'll add to that once the data is available and usable, a quick and easy way to identify where those opportunities may exist may simply just be looking at the number of manufacturers that you have in a given product category, whether it's vendors or manufacturers. Sometimes there's very good reasons why there's a good number of vendors and manufacturers in that product category. And other times it's a definite opportunity for standardization or to reduce the number of manufacturers and potentially realize some savings there. So if we get the data, if we look at the number of vendors and manufacturers in a product category, that's often a great route to start to find those opportunities.
Tim, Andy, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
To learn more about how ECRI can support your supply chain and purchasing teams, visit ecri.org/providers and click on the Technology Decision Support icon. Be sure to subscribe to Smart Healthcare Safety on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts to get our latest episodes. Visit us on YouTube at youtube.com/ECRI Institute to see our new monthly video series, ECRI Now, with more insights from our experts. We welcome your feedback. Visit us at ecri.org or email us at ecri-podcasts@ecri.org.